Hey, good evening, truth seekers. Or not. Welcome to tonight's Molloy program. Hey, somebody sent me today a link to The Daily Show, Jon Stewart's program last Friday, where he went after Keith Olbermann because of Olbermann's, according to Jon Stewart, Olbermann's over-the-top slash-and-burn attack on Republicans, but especially the guy from Brown from Massachusetts. And I watched the bit from Stewart, a 6 or 7 minute long video, YouTube, and it was kind of bizarre because he was funny. He really ripped Olbermann a new rear end. But at the very end, Stewart says, more or less, I'm paraphrasing, you know, if anybody should be over the top or out of control, it should be me. Well, then I think it was Monday. Was it Monday that Olbermann came on his program and apologized, ran the whole thing, the whole 6 or 7 minutes that, what a waste of MSNBC time that was, ran the whole thing and then, more or less said, yeah, okay, I've been acting over the top lately. I'm not quite sure what all that means. We have had, first of all, Jon Stewart, The Daily Show, whose program I think is one of the best on television. Oddly enough, so many people under the age of 30 go to The Daily Show to get their news coverage. But I'm not sure what to make of this, because I'm not going to get in the way of somebody else's feud. These guys are superstars, you know, it has nothing to do with me. But it is something that I have noticed, certainly from the left, if both these guys can be considered to be on the left, and I think they can, the liberal left, whatever. They're both very, 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 very corporate, but they present a point of view from, you know, a liberal political point of view. I don't know what they are in their private lives. Maybe they laugh all the way to the bank, the same way Limbaugh does. I have no idea. But I've noticed so many times that as soon as somebody starts getting really intense, a liberal in media starts getting really intense with his or her attacks on the established right-wingers, the established conservatives, something happens. First of all, you start reading reports like I read today that says Olbermann's ratings are down. I've said before, I no more trust ratings than I trust somebody who tells me the moon is made out of purple cheese. I realize that there are ways to track television viewing, but I also realize that the information in those tracking machines is proprietary, kind of like Diebold voting machines, and you accept what the ratings companies tell you, or you don't. I mean, there's no halfway ground. You can't say, well, okay, I accept part of it. No, you either accept all of Nielsen or whoever it is now, or you don't. But what I find interesting, I've seen this happen repeatedly to liberals, quote, quote, or lefties, quote, quote, going all the way back to the Smothers Brothers. When their program was canceled by CBS back during the Nixon administration, because all of a sudden, Tom and Dick Smothers stopped being just a couple of cute boys from, where are they from, Indiana, Illinois, someplace, from the country's midsection, all of a sudden started going after Nixon and going after the war in Vietnam and going after a lot of sacred cows that corporate America didn't like. And I'm talking about back in the 60s. Late 60s, but 60s nonetheless. We can go on and on with this. Every single time somebody starts to attack the right-wing establishment, they either get disappeared or they are counterattacked, usually by somebody from their own side of the aisle. Now, if you look at Limbaugh or Fox News or Drudge or any of these scum on the right, sure, they're made fun of a lot, they're attacked, but corporate America never goes after them. Corporate America never says to Limbaugh, You know, what you're doing is over the top. The rating services never say to Limbaugh, you really don't have 14 million listeners a week, Mr. Limbaugh. You have 6 million. But we've been, you know, letting the story go anyway because you provide cover for us. Now, somebody could say, well, they went after Beck's advertisers. Oh, yeah, that made a difference, didn't it? And if you watched the Sunday talk show, I forget which one it was, last Sunday, you saw Roger Ailes defending Glenn Beck as though Glenn Beck were Roger Ailes' pet puppy, which in a way he is. But so I'm trying to understand what's going on with the assault on Countdown, on Keith Olbermann's program. Olbermann more or less apologized. Well, now there's more of the story. At the same time that, according to what I read, Olbermann has lost 46% of his audience in the past year. I find that extremely hard to believe. But let's stipulate that ratings companies always tell the truth. At the same time, we are now told that the most trusted news service in media is Fox, by the latest polling. We also are told that Bill O'Reilly, one of the slimiest people ever to appear on television, has increased his audience almost to the same extent that Olbermann's lost his. I think 53% over last year. Isn't that interesting? Now, to suggest it's anything other than real facts would be to insinuate that I have an inside track to all this stuff, which I don't. But neither do you. And neither does anybody. Because it's proprietary information. You either accept it or you don't accept it. But if the truth is that Fox News is seen as the most reliable news source above CBS, ABC, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, Bloomberg, PBS, if that's the case, then the country literally is lost. This country literally is gone. And any effort to pretend like there's some way, whether, you know, you're writing like George Lakoff writes about starting a movement. So many writers on the left talk about, well, you know, we got to go back to the fundamentals, go back to the idea of organizing, go back to the idea of bottom up rather than top down in terms of a movement. Well, okay, sure. But if we have reached a point where Fox is seen as, to any degree, a reliable news source, as somebody has pointed out, in the 8 or 9, 10, 11, whatever, however many years it's been that they've been on the air, they have never, or 15 years, they have never, ever, not once, broken a story, done any investigative journalism. They have never added anything to public discussion except rumor, innuendo, gossip, attacks on liberals, attacks on people who question U.S. policy, whether it's foreign or domestic. If that has become the primary source of trusted news in this country, then I'll tell you what, folks, it's all over.
So complex, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify the complex. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda, propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda, propaganda, propaganda. Try and convince the folks the beach is never sandy. You can't go higher.
sugar barrel.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I'm not going to get involved in wasting the time on this program for a discussion of some sort of a takedown by John Stewart where it concerns Keith Olbermann. Not at all. That's their business. Like I say, those guys play in a whole different sandbox from the one I play in. But I couldn't fail but take notice when somebody sent me both of these videos. By the way, Bill reminds me that Smothers Brothers are not from the Midwest. They're from San Jose, California. and they were discovered when they were both going to San Jose State College. It's now university. My bad. I just wanted to mention that. Just wanted to mention the John Stewart Olbermann thing. I just thought it was very bizarre to see that. For people who have forsworn vaccines for their children because they are convinced that preservatives in the vaccines are one of the primary, if not the only, cause of autism, interesting news today from the British medical journal, The Lancet. I wonder how this is going to affect Bobby Kennedy Jr. on Ring of Fire, because he's a big advocate of autism being, if not cause, certainly contributing factor for coming from thimerosal and some of the other preservatives in these vaccines. I've talked about this a little bit on this program over the years. The study that The Lancet is now retracting as totally a fraud goes back to 1998. And the medical journal back then linked routine childhood vaccine to autism and Ball disease. The Lancet now says that the research never should have been published because it is so deeply and fatally flawed. The UK General Medical Council, which licenses doctors, concluded in a report a few days ago that three researchers led by Andrew Wakefield, he's the one whose name is always talked about as the one who wrote this report, although it was three of them. The three researchers led by Andrew Wakefield and the Royal Free Hospital in London carried out invasive, unnecessary tests, failed to act in the best interests of the children, misused public funds. It also said Wakefield did not disclose the conflict of interest as he was involved in legal claims against the vaccine makers. The Lancet editors wrote in a statement today, quote, "It has become clear that several elements of the 1998 paper by Wakefield et al. Are incorrect, contrary to the findings of an earlier investigation." And it goes on. Jeffrey Boskamp, a pediatrician here in the States at Hackensack University Medical Center in New Jersey, said, quote, "It was outrageous. Most of the authors asked for their names to be removed from the study. It's unfortunate that it undermined confidence in vaccines when, in fact, it wasn't true at all." End quote. The Lancet, with the action today by The Lancet, the paper was retracted from the publishing record and stripped of all its scientific claims. Wakefield oversees a research program at a treatment center for children with developmental disorders in Austin, Texas. Wakefield said in a statement today, quote, "The allegations against me and against my colleagues are both unfounded and unjust, and I invite anyone to examine the contents of these proceedings and come to their own conclusion," end quote, which doesn't address the charges at all. But what Bloomberg reports today in this revelation that the Lancet Medical Journal has retracted it and has demanded that any scientific claims that were carried in that article be stripped because it's no longer valid. It was a lie. But as a result of that 1998 study, in the UK, immunization rates plunged to less than 80% by 2003. Normally, in a country like England or a society like the United Kingdom, you'll find immunization rates approaching 95, 96, 98%. They had plunged to 80% by 2003 as parents concerned about the health risks refused to have their children vaccinated. That's according to the Health Protection Agency, which is, I guess, kind of like our FDA, maybe. 10 of the 12 authors in a 2004 article in The Lancet backed away from the suggestion that autism were linked to the vaccine. And a panel in 2004, and a panel of U.S. government advisors found that same year, 2004, that childhood vaccination did not raise the risk of autism. I just wonder. It's a subject that the few times I've mentioned it has really gotten people riled up about this. But I'm going to open up the lines right now during this break. And I want you to address this issue only, okay? Just for a few minutes here, what your take is on the fact that the Lancet Medical Journal has declared this thing without scientific basis and have rejected it in its entirety. The number here is 877-996-2556.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
Twenty-five before the hour, the story very quickly is the Lancet Medical Journal has decided that they are retracting a study from 1998, a study published by one Wakefield, a Dr. Wakefield, and three other researchers that drew a link between vaccines and autism. The Lancet says that There are no longer any reason to pretend there are valid scientific claims in the report. Just curious what you think. Carolyn's in San Francisco. Hey, Carolyn.
Hi. I have a lot to say about this topic. My son wouldn't be in school if it weren't for the work of Wakefield and Dr. Krugsman also. People take aspirin, and 1 in 100, 1 in 500 has a terrible result.
Mm-hmm.
All that Wakefield did was notice the correlation between kids diagnosed with what's called autism and some bowel issues. Mm-hmm. He did some research on it. He found this. My child was like running into walls because of the pain in his abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did the colonoscopy on him, they found the things that are characteristic of these kids that have the measles virus from the vaccine, not the measles virus from the wild measles virus, that lodges in their intestine and never goes away. This is different than the issue about thimerosal and the preservatives that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be related. The same kids who get harmed by that get harmed by this. But if you want to see the research on it, I actually am a graduate of Carnegie Mellon. I was a science major. There are some very smart parents who were also skeptical about this whole vaccine thing, and that's why we got our kids vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started reading this science, and we were shocked. And I looked back at my medical record. I had called back every time he got a shot. I called in that he had a reaction. After the MMR, he had a rash and all kinds of weird stuff happening, and he never slept again, like more than 5 to 7 hours a night. He had been a normal kid who did everything normally.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that some kids might not happen to get harmed by vaccines, and that any doctor who looks into this is going to get tried to be destroyed the way they try to destroy Andrew Wakefield, The Lancet lied. And the stuff they said about Andrew Wakefield, if you have the time to read the research and read about the story, that's my son who's... sorry, Kyle, I asked you to be quiet, please. But you just have no idea the bowel issues with these kids. Nobody knows about it. You're only seeing the kids at the tip of the iceberg. You're not seeing the kids rolling around on the floor in special ed.
Oh, wait,
You're
wait.
Seeing the kids that are Carol,
if I might interrupt, don't set me up as being someone who... says that there is no anecdotal proof of any of this. I'm not. I take a purely neutral position. All I did was come on the program tonight and report what the Lancet has decided. So I'd appreciate if you not set me up as the straw man here. I'm not advocating one way or the other.
Because I felt kind of let go by the liberal press that don't always. I'm glad that you're giving us the opportunity, but I see this, and it's so much like the other stuff that goes on—the lies that there's
I know you're obviously upset. I don't know if it's because you're on the radio or you're just upset, but when you say the lies of the liberal press, I've got to stop you.
No. I mean the other way. Everyone in the liberal press gets it, that there's lies about so many things. You know, Sarah Palin comes on and says stuff that's totally outrageous. But they don't understand that there's also lies about medical issues like this to protect
farmers. Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, because you obviously have a thousand million times more knowledge about the subject than I. I have raised four children and have a 5.5-year-old now. They have all gotten their vaccines and none of them ever got sick. So I'm not one to say that getting these vaccines will cause illness. But my question would be, is it the vaccine or is it the child? Does the child like for example, if I
think it's a child. I totally agree with you. Some
right.
kids. We want the kids who are vulnerable to be recognized, and that's all we're asking.
Oh, no, and I agree with that. But the indictment has been against all vaccines.
Now, that's a misrepresentation.
Exactly.
Even Jenny McCarthy, she'll say, we're not against vaccines. We're say, take the stuff out of the vaccines. Take the mercury out of the vaccines. Take the aluminum out of the vaccines. We're not against vaccines, and most
right.
parents actually aren't. But, yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because it's we're against... the vaccines being the lie that just like aspirin, like I just want a doctor to say to me, and only these doctors who've had this happen to their own children will, oh, well, some kids might get harmed by this. That's
mm-hmm.
why we set up the vaccine injury court. Instead, they act like just saying my kid eats peanut butter and say he has an allergic reaction. I'm not against peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I guess
drives us crazy.
Right. I guess that's most of what. In the few times I've addressed this issue, that's most of what I hear. What happens is I'll bring the issue up, and my email inbox will be inundated with everything from research studies saying there is a direct link between the whole vaccination program, and very very seldom is the thimerosal or the preservatives mentioned. What it is just vaccines, period. And from that, from studies all the way to accusing me of being a shill for big pharma or something, and I'm none of that.
No, I don't think you are, and I think
right.
I can understand from what you're saying. You're just asking the question,
right?
And I really appreciate that you brought it up.
Okay,
because I don't even know. I will tell you, I know that the work of Wakefield and Creekman, because they found these bowel problems in these kids.
Right.
And a lot of the kids do have biological problems, and that's one of the things that if you talk to the teachers after 30 years, yeah, there were always the kids that were a little strange, but there weren't the kids that had all these medical issues.
Right.
So the thing is, it's a biomedical thing going on, and we just want help for our kids. And
That's understandable,
and of course
sure.
you're going to think what you think, because you're not getting... We had to do research like you wouldn't believe to find the scientific studies. If you go to Age of Autism or GenerationRescue.org, there are tons of studies actually saying this. But how would you, as a typical person, all you're going to hear, I had a friend say, you better be careful about vaccinating if you have any kind of heavy metal sensitivity in your family. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what a nut. And I vaccinated my kid. I mean, most people, so I totally understand why people, who's going to take the time to do that when your doctors are telling you, go ahead, go ahead, go ahead. But the reason I'm so emotional about this is I really thought that Andrew Wakefield was going to win this case because I'd read all the evidence, and I wanted him to win the case, and I wanted the tide to turn and people to start saying, okay, some kids do get harmed by this. Let's fix it.
Well,
so
then, let me ask you this. The Lancet has not, I mean, they're not involved in a case. What they've said is, in reviewing over the past 10 or 12 years, the evidence presented in the article authored by Wakefield and three others, we have come to the conclusion that there's no scientific foundation to publish it in The Lancet. That's all they've said. Now, to me, that that's what science is. Science makes a declaration. And it becomes received wisdom until science makes another declaration and says, well, we were wrong. The Earth is not the center of the solar system. The sun is. And then we do that. So are you suggesting, and this is not a challenge, I'm just curious, are you suggesting then that The Lancet is wrong?
I'm suggesting there was a lot of corruption in this case. And also the way that the science is done, even Bernadine Healy admitted that they deliberately designed studies in such a way that it would not show a relationship between vaccines and autism if such a study existed. And you can see that if you look it up from the NIH after she was done running the NIH. So I don't know what studies they're talking about. I'm sure there's studies that show, like you said, all of your kids, none of them had any problems right. like this from vaccines. But there's ways to exclude. Some of these studies I've read, they deliberately excluded kids that had any kind of bowel issues, say. Well, we won't include them because they might have had bowel issues anyway. I mean, but they were, the studies are not, I don't trust studies. All I know is I read a lot of things about this, and I saw the slides and the presentations and all this other stuff. And I went and took my child literally to Thoughtful House, where Wakefield does not actually treat children, but his theories are worked with some, board-certified gastroenterologists, et cetera. And my son, they treated him appropriate for it. He had not been able to stay in school longer than an hour a day, and now he's in school full-time. He's learned how to read. He's doing fantastic. The psychologist pulled me aside and said, I think he's probably going to end up in the gifted group next year. Do you know what that's like from a kid who was 5 years old who couldn't stay? This is why it's so emotional to me. Mm-hmm. If this doctor having the guts to keep going instead of crawling into a hole when these accusations came out, is why my son's in school. And so I'm sure you have a lot of other calls.
Well, yeah.
I appreciate you bringing this up. But I'll email you to follow up.
I'm not sure how Dr. Wakefield helped your son.
I was being told that my son was banging into things as a behavior. My son was, like, draping himself over couches because it's something
right.
that the kids do. My son was, like, banging into people. He was freaked out.
Hey, can you hold on? Can you hold it? Carolyn, let me get you to hold on just for a second. I've got to do this break, and I'll come back because I'm curious how Wakefield was such a force in your son's life. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. We're talking about the Lancet Medical Journal has repudiated a study that's been out there since 1998 about a connection between vaccine additives, whether they're preservatives or boosters or whatever they call them, and autism. We're talking with Carolyn in San Francisco. What I'm curious about, Carolyn, is you say that Dr. Wakefield saved your child's life. How did that happen?
Well, he saved his ability to function. My son was doing things like banging into walls, literally. Like he'd run into a wall and put his tummy into it. He'd run into other kids, and so he'd get in trouble. He was acting out like that, and everyone was treating it like a behavior. you know, like give the kid an M&M and they'll stop type of thing, as if it's an dog training. And I became familiar with the work of Wakefield and Krugsman and the studies they had done linking bowel problems and behavior problems to some of the kids with autism. So we took him to see the doctor in Texas, and they did a scope. They used a pill cam, and they found that my son had all kinds of issues with his upper intestine. Mm. It's an area they usually don't look at that are consistent with these kids with autism. And one of the people at this place, Thoughtful House, told me on the side, he said, "We wish we'd never even mentioned the MMR, and we just said some of these kids with autism have bowel problems, because we really, at this point, don't care about that fight. We care about helping these kids." And because it got linked to the MMR, a lot of energy was spent saying these kids don't have bowel problems, but a large percentage of the kids do. So regardless of what the cause is, what Andrew Wakefield was guilty of is noticing that a lot of these kids had this problem, and that happened to be the first thing he postulated.
Well,
he never even said for sure.
I'm missing
the saddest part.
I don't mean to.
Oh, he got treated. He got.
I understand, Carolyn. Hold on just a second. All of a sudden, I'm just feeling stupid. I don't get the connection between your son or any of these children's upper bowel problem and autism and vaccines.
Because the measles attacks your intestine. This is the MMR issue, not the thimerosal issue. The MMR, the measles vaccine, the theory is that the measles vaccine in some of these kids, just like AIDS or some other kind of virus, stays persistent in their body.
Right.
And one of the symptoms of the measles vaccine, apparently, is that it causes damage to the intestine and it never really repairs itself. And so they found measles vaccine, the same measles that's in the vaccine, not the one that's out in the wild that you would catch if you, in these kids' intestines, still living there, sort of like something like AIDS or whatever. It affects their immune system. My son's immune system was at a level similar to an AIDS patient.
And this bowel, the bowel syndrome has an effect on the noticeable or visible signs of autism in a child?
What it does is, this part of the theory is that if your gut is affected, your brain is affected. There's a lot of research on that. Your immunity is affected. The different enzymes and hormones and all the things that go to your brain are affected. Mm-hmm. And I can send you links with the science, and that affects your ability to do a lot of things. But not only that, you're in pain. And so what happened for my child was, in his case, the biggest problem was the pain and the acting out. And so he got treated for the actual issues, like, you know, to treat his intestine and help calm it down. And then, lo and behold, he stopped banging into things and doing all these things that were supposedly willful behaviors from a kid out of control with autism. They were actually symptoms of pain. And
the theory is
it's inflammation that affects your brain, too.
Well, let me ask you this. Did your son ever get a clear medical diagnosis of autism or a clear medical diagnosis of upper bowel disorder or syndrome, whatever it's called,
both.
Or both?
Yeah.
Or
he
both.
Both.
He got both. And you were told that both are not just linked, but they're causative. One causes the other.
That's part of the theory, yeah. And this is different than the theory of the mercury. It's related because the theory is that some of the kids, because of the bowel issue, the mercury doesn't process out of their body.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, listen, Carolyn, thank you.
It's very complicated, but I really appreciate your listening, and I listen to you all the time. I love you. I'm so excited that you took on this topic and that you really listened. It was a great conversation and dialogue.
Well, thanks for checking in.
I'll email you some links if you're interested.
Please do.
It's a lot of reading.
Please do.
Mike.
All right.
Awesome show.
Thanks, Carolyn. Appreciate you checking in. Obviously, I say obviously because I've been on the sidelines of this topic for years. Ever since the Wakefield, I can remember when the Wakefield study came out, because I remember a lot of conversation about it, a lot of controversy about it, a lot of pediatricians who went totally ballistic and said if this theory or if this observation or if this conclusion by Dr. Wakefield takes root in the population, it's going to produce an uptick in these horrendous childhood diseases that that had been, if not defeated, had certainly been reduced to the point where kids are no longer, American kids are no longer to the degree that they were when I was a kid, dying of measles. They're no longer dying of whooping cough. They're no longer dying of any of these diseases, mumps. I know as a kid, I got these diseases. I can remember having mumps when I was maybe 7. I remember the horrible pain in my throat and neck and groin. I remember having chicken pox. I had the measles. I remember my mother, who was the waitress at the time, had to tell the woman who took care of me during the day, keep Mike in a dark room all day. I guess the theory being that if you had measles and were exposed to daylight, something equally horrific would occur. So many of those childhood diseases that I caught, and a lot of kids did. I didn't get rheumatic fever. There were kids that got rheumatic fever, polio. I didn't get it. A lot of kids got it. But all those diseases, I've looked at medical science as a terrible swift sword against those diseases. And part of that has been a program of vaccinations. Let's continue this after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Seven past the hour, probably a day late and a dollar short on bringing up this topic of, not the topic of vaccine-connected autism or Ball disease, although that seems to be the link that has caused so many people on either side of this issue to get very, 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 very emotionally and scientifically involved. What we're talking about is Bloomberg News Services reporting that the Lancet Medical Journal has retracted a study from 1998 that linked routine childhood vaccine to autism and Ball disease after a UK investigation found flaws in the research. They went so far as to say that it contained the scientific claims contained within the article were false, and those claims are being stripped from the publishing record. This is akin to having Winston Smith shove your entire history down the memory hole. I mean, this is pretty serious stuff. Excuse me. The big debate seems to be between genuine scientific research that is designed to, hopefully, to provide a better life or a longer life or a less pain-filled life or whatever. You can get very existential about this if you want to. But on the one hand, scientific research working in that direction. On the other hand, big pharma that we all would like to burn at the stake and plunge knives into its head, its arms, legs, whatever body parts it has. Big pharma on the one hand that sells us junk every chance it gets, junks up our bodies, alters our food supply, alters everything. You're right. You can't trust big pharma any further than you can throw the Washington Monument. So there seems to be the conflict. Scientific research and advancement on the one hand, big pharma on the other. The scientific research is only good insofar as it can be converted into a usable product. You understand what I'm saying? If science discovers an antidote for some sort of poisoning, and everyone becomes familiar with the antidote, and sure enough, if you or someone you know swallows the poison, you take the antidote, and surprise, surprise, you don't die, whereas in the past you would die. Now, do we credit medical research with that, or do we fault Big Pharma for bringing up the issue to begin with? It's kind of like that. I grew up in a time before, oh my God, the polio vaccine. I can remember when the Salk vaccine was discovered, or not discovered, but formulated. And Jonas Salk was a hero on the same level that, I don't know, even beyond Einstein. Salk was Salk. He saved millions of lives, if not tens of millions, hundreds of millions, since the 50s, when was it developed? In the 50s? I think it was in the 50s. Early 50s. All I remember is going in to get the vaccination. Now, my younger brothers got the sugar cube, because then came the Sabin vaccine. I believe the Salk vaccine was live pathogen, whereas the Sabin was killed pathogen. I think I've got it right there. Consequently, the sugar cube. Now, I've always been intrigued with polio vaccine on a sugar cube in one generation, next generation, LSD on a sugar cube. Go figure. But it seems like that's been the conflict. All of a sudden, my feeling has been, when I've put together a feeling about this, or a thought, I should say, my thought has been that autism has an environmental factor that is not something that comes with a vaccine, and that's only because I'm at that level of thinking about it. My evidence is like the evidence of families who have autistic children and can draw a direct line between autism and a vaccine. Mine is the opposite. I can draw no direct line between vaccines and any sort of disorder. And again, with the children I've had and the grandchildren and so on and so forth, and now we have Molly, and I, you know, Kathy and I had to think long and hard about the H1N1 vaccine until finally we decided that she and I got the shot, you got it. You got the nasal. I got the shot. Because of my age, they said you should not get the nasal because it's a live vaccine, attenuated, but still live. right? I got that right. Molly got the nasal, and I don't know what to say, except, I read a lot of emails from a lot of people said, Malloy, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And my son, Chris, who's in the medical field, I talked to him about it. Even he said, I don't think maybe you should get Molly. That's his little sister. I don't think maybe you should get Molly vaccinated against this. I said, why? And he said, well, a couple of reasons. First of all, it may mutate very quickly, and then the risk, the attendant risk that goes with any vaccine, not autism, but just a reaction, was for nothing if it mutates quickly. My son Chris said, I don't think this is going to be the kind of global pandemic that they're talking about. Now, as he works through his studies, he also works in a hospital, so he gets some firsthand experience here. Well, I listened to him and did a little bit of or a considerable amount of research via the internet, and Kathy and I finally decided we're going to go with the vaccine. And I think the reason is because neither of us, Kathy's not had children except Molly, and I have had, but neither of us have any experience with vaccines or vaccinations causing anything other than a defense against whatever disease we're vaccinating, or I was vaccinating my children against. In the case of Molly, we were vaccinating her against. Molly has had, I've talked about this on the air, she's had a series of vaccines. And Now, what will, I mean, is this all going to kick in when she's 30 and all of a sudden she's, all the vaccines she has a child are going to affect her in some hideous, horrendous, collapse of her systems, digestive or auditory or respiratory or cardiac or, you know, I certainly hope not. I hope not. I'm very aware of this massive uptick in autism cases. What is it? One in, what is it, Kathy? One in 10, one in 12 children now, or one in 8 or something, is now, has a part of the autism syndrome, which includes everything from Asperger's all the way up to profound autism. So I'm aware of all that, but my feeling has been that it has been something in the environment that is doing this to us. We were talking last night about we are in, some scientists believe, we are in another mass extinction mode. And it's slow by human life standards. It you know, it's not something you can sit back and observe. So, and part of that has to be environmental. So that has been my thought, that autism, this horrendous surge in autism cases has to do with environmental issues, because it's my understanding from the bit of reading I've done that children who don't get vaccines do develop autism early on. And children who do get the vaccines don't. So, you know, I was always taught, in my limited amount of science background, to look for cause and effect. You know, to look for, I'm simplifying here, but a chain of events where you start with A, which leads to B, which leads to C, which leads to D, which leads to the conclusion. And that in science, the conclusion has to be fairly, especially biological science, it has to be fairly direct. There's lots of room for guesswork in the physics, for example, or quantum mechanics, but there's very little room for guesswork, isn't there, in medical cause and effect. We'll take your call as soon as we come back here. I'm Mike Mulway.
Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you
walk. The Mike Mulloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Whoa, that walk.
And the Mike Mulloy Show. Talk.
You knocks me out. Out off of my feet.
Boom, boom, 21 boom, past boom. The hour. Mike in Golden, Colorado writes, if Lancet is lying about the vaccine setting, that did they lie about their estimates of Iraqi war dead? We cannot believe a source when it tickles our prejudices and disbelieve it when it does not. We cannot allege dishonesty in the source of very inconvenient datum, or we, like the far right, will soon be inhabiting our own fantasy universe. Right, Mike, I'm not sure what I'm not sure that was very well done, but I'm not sure what your point was. But I liked it. All right, you know what we're talking about. Tim is in Atlanta, listening online. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't have a chance to tell your wife during the brief call screening, but I am one of those people that sort of has a personal stake in this. I don't have a personal grudge to bear against vaccines or companies or anything like that, but when I was a child, I was diagnosed with they called it borderline, I was borderline withdrawn. That was the way mm-hmm. my family doctor put it. But, you know, essentially I was one of those kids in the years since, I've done a little research on my own and found out I was more or less a borderline. I had a syndrome of borderline autism and Asperger's, because I was, you know, the 6 or 7 year old kid that would be there at the dinner party with all the adults, and they'd be looking at me like, where's coming at us with all these questions about trees and animals and birds and the universe and, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. But at the same time, then when all the adults were gone, I would go sit in the corner, you know, with my family and go, you know, rock myself silly for 4 hours straight on the family couch.
Yeah.
You know, because it helped me think.
Right.
So
right.
It was, you know, it was a strange childhood. And at some point, I somehow managed to outgrow that. I think that happened for me.
Was there any intervention at all? Did your parents just leave it alone? Did, or what? How did you?
I would say the intervention on my parents' part, because there was just no information hardly on the 1960s as to what was going on, was they just were very accepting. And somehow the only intervention that actually happened was during my late teens. I decided just, it was like my body was telling me my diet was all messed up, and I started cleaning up my diet. And over a period of about 5 or 6 years, the symptoms slowly went away. But it was a really tough 5 or 6 years. It was like my body was detoxing.
Do you see the symptoms disappearing as a result of diet change, or perhaps just biochemical changes in your body as a result of getting older, hitting adolescence, and these symptoms just fading, you know, just disappearing?
Well, that's interesting, too, because all I have, again, is anecdotal, but it's first person. What ended up happening was at first they got extremely severe, like around 17 or 18, which is why I decided, you know, I don't know what's going on, but my family didn't have the money for a lot of doctor care or any other type of care, and so I just cleaned up my diet.
Well, what's interesting?
What's about 5 or 6 years, emotional problems eased, and you know, just physical discomfort, general physical discomfort.
As you're saying this, I hate to interrupt, but it sounds like you were very clear-headed in that you could, you had the ability to stand aside from, so to speak, and take an objective look at what was going on and evaluate what was going on. It's my understanding that kids who have Asperger's or autism or any of that cluster of different symptoms that are now being lumped together under autism, they don't have the ability to...
They don't have that option, that's correct.
Right, to stand back and...
Extremely borderline, right.
Yeah.
Extremely. You know, but this is the point where I was reading Temple Grandin's book when it first came out back there in the 90s, and I remember I was telling to my girlfriend at the time, like, oh my God, it's like, she's describing all these things I felt when I was a kid. You know, she was just talking about all these symptoms that she has and all these different things. And she's a very high-functioning autistic person. And my girlfriend was like, oh, you're kidding. I'm like, no, this is me. She's
about
me here.
What's your take now as an adult? What is your take on the discussion, argument, points of view? Autism is the result of pollutants or... other things inside the vaccines?
It's a multifaceted question. I do think mercury is central in that equation, but there's also, it's like the lady that called earlier this evening, I think she's correct in that there's a percentage of children that will be affected by it because autism strikes very early.
Mm-hmm.
There's a percentage of children, and we don't know what that percentage is, but it appears to be growing in the United States.
Right, right. It
and,
does.
You know, whether it's thimerosal or whether it's mercury from coal-fired power plants, I should think if there was a political will to study that question, we would have an answer. And in that respect, I would have to agree with her. I don't think it's the vaccines per se, although the MMR information she had I found quite enlightening. I never had that vaccination. I just had the regular measles.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other childhood illnesses that put me in the hospital, but measles was not one of them. So I guess I don't know whether I was... would ever be sensitive to the measles vaccination or not. I probably might have been, depending on what was going on. I definitely had, you know, all the other childhood vaccinations, and so did my brother. He didn't seem to have any other reactions. So
right.
there is this sort of genetic sensitivity. Then there's the environmental factor, and vaccines have this unfortunate ability to, once something's in your bloodstream, there's always the potential to penetrate the blood-brain barrier. And I think in some kids it does, and some kids it doesn't. Some kids maybe and mercury is just one of the most toxic substances known to man. I can't imagine why they would put that as
a
preservative in a vaccine when, you know, there's other things available.
Hey, Tim, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate the first-person account. Thank you.
So at night I sit and I watch for stars to stay. Are they winking and then they're gone down the mills of this machine? But it used to be so.
hates these people. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. This discussion started with the news today that the Lancet Medical Journal has refuted and withdrawn the 1998 paper published in their publication by Dr. Wakefield and two or three others regarding the connection between vaccines and autism. The Lancet has decided that the scientific claims made in that paper are invalid, and the paper was retracted from the published record and the scientific claims stripped from it, which I don't know how it works in medical publishing circles, but that seems like a fairly what's the word I'm looking for, Kathy? complete way of saying this is not good science. I don't know. Again, my uninformed opinion, uninformed to the degree that a lot of people who have been dealing with this, my uninformed opinion has been that this unbelievable spike in autism in children is a result of environmental degradation. What is it if you go get your blood tested for heavy metals and man-made chemicals, you will be shocked at what you find. I've not done that. All they do, I guess, take a little blood, a little urine, and tell you how polluted you are. One thing I do remember from reading about these studies, though, is that all of us, every one of us, you, your baby, Kathy and I talked about this when she breastfed Molly. Mother's milk contains PCBs. PCBs are in the systems of every single person in America. Not 90%, not 99.9, everyone. PCBs, if you understand what they are highly toxic and completely man-made, isn't that right? Or it's a synthetic product that has become just absolutely everywhere. It's everywhere. And when you have substances like that that show up in breast milk, that show up in testicular fluid, that show up in digestive juices, that shows up in lung tissue, that shows up in, you know, my God. So, and that's just PCBs. What is it? Polychlorinated biphenyls? Did I get that right? I don't even know. I should have done it during the break, looked it up in Wikipedia, but I didn't. So, the people, the parents who are dealing with children who are in turn dealing with autism, and the parents are dealing with it. I understand. My God, if you have a kid who's not dealing with that stuff, just the regular expected developmental stuff can drive the average parent nuts sometimes. Kathy and I were talking about this today. You know, we're pleased with Molly's development at this point, yada yada, like most parents are, you know. But we somehow the conversation drifted into those moments when Molly can make one of us just feel like ripping our hair out. You know, you just want to pull your hair out by the clumps. You're not gonna attack your kid. But you know, you find yourself yelling. We've yelled at Molly. We've sent her to her room. We've had timeouts. We've done all that. Just a kid who's not dealing with any of this stuff can drive an adult crazy sometimes. It can put a tremendous strain on marriage, on relationships. How then families survive intact that are dealing with these developmental disorders, or however you want to identify them, that whole panel, is that that whole spectrum of autism disorders, and apparently now it's been broadened out to include some disorders that are almost undefinable. They make up terms, you know. About behavioral problems. I have seen examples of children with autism, with profound autism, and it's very upsetting to me as a parent that does not have to incorporate that into my daily life. I don't know how parents do it. I don't, literally don't. So, you know, my point of view on all this is just based on my own experience, my own limited reading about this topic. But you cannot help but know that autism is spiking to a point that it's, you know, every once in a while I read another report in the New York Times science section. Every Tuesday it comes out, you know, science section. And I'll say to Kathy, my God, look at this. It's 1 in 12 children. It's 1 in 8 children. It just keeps going up, 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 up. And it's been very difficult for me to say to myself in my own little world, not to anyone else, but in my own little world, well, this is because of thimerosal or, you know, preservatives inside vaccines. That's what this is about. I just haven't been able to do that. I think it's much, much worse than that. But I don't know. Nancy's in Minneapolis listening to KTNF. Thanks for holding on. I'm sorry it took so long.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I've been a nurse for 30 years, and I have two sons with autism. And I used to be a vaccine pusher, but that all came to a screeching halt after I read Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s article and then read the science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Wakefield is absolutely spot on as far as I'm concerned. He's not making a lot of money off of this. But I will say that what I've seen in the last 20 years is that the medical journals have become corrupted with Big Pharma.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at any medical journal, and the main sponsors, the main advertisers in them are Big Pharma. So, yeah, they've got a lot at stake by keeping the lie alive. And it's there's a website called We Support Dr. Wakefield,
mm-hmm.
where there's a number of grassroots autism groups that are supporting this man and some of his scientific evidence and others that support him. But the bigger question to me is, do you really think that the pharmaceutical industry wants us healthy? Do you really think that they want to cure anything? All they want is to make sure that we have more pills to give to people and that everybody's on pills.
Well, I understand that point of view, Nancy, and to a certain degree I share it. On the other hand, I also still put a lot of faith in medical research, in science. I realize that so much of it has been corrupted by corporate America, whether it's, you know, whatever phase of corporate America, it gets its hands on something, it messes it up and then strangles it and then rapes it and then kills it. And I understand that. I have no love or affection for corporate America. On the other hand, like I just said, I do believe in and respect the scientific method, the results of science, what science produces, and if a medical researcher comes up with a means of preventing disease, and then that means is produced by a corporation, well, this is not in defense of corporations, but who else is going to produce it?
But I don't think they do prevent anything.
How does one prove that? I've had my 6-year-old, almost 6-year-old, vaccinated against childhood diseases, and she hasn't caught any. She hasn't developed any. Whereas children around her who may or may not have been vaccinated, I don't know, some of them have developed these things. So, is it proper for me, from a medical standpoint, to say because my child was vaccinated, she got no diseases? No, it is not scientifically rational for me to say that. But it is to me, it was never worth the risk to roll the dice about vaccines where it concerned my child. And that's how I saw it, as rolling the dice. And my child's pediatrician is not one to recommend medicine. She has insisted that Molly be on a strong regimen of vitamin D, and even insisted that I be on it, which we have, even though we get an awful lot of sun. We live in the South. But the reasons for that, to Molly's pediatrician, were based in science. And so I don't know. Hey, hold on a second. I'll let the time get up on me there. Hold on just a second. I'll come right back after the break.
Truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. I'm talking with Nancy in Minneapolis. All right, where were we? I totally lost my train of thought here, Nancy.
Well, I'm just saying that the journals, the medical journals, have become corrupt with the pharmaceutical industry. And you even when you do find a research paper, you have to see who financed that research. And if the pharmaceutical industry is involved, right away you're going to have a biased result. Or there is a number of studies where if you read just the summary, it is not consistent with the data. It's unbelievable what's going on with science right now.
Well, according to this report in Bloomberg today, the lead researcher, Andrew Wakefield, it says here, Wakefield didn't disclose when he published this a conflict of interest as he was involved in legal claims against vaccine makers. The editors of The Lancet said today, quote, "It has become clear that several elements of the 1998 paper by Wakefield et al. Are incorrect, contrary to the findings of an earlier investigation." And then, you know, when we talk about corruption, I'm not suggesting that Wakefield was corrupt because he didn't reveal, according to The Lancet, that he was involved in legal claims against the vaccine makers. But if what you're saying, if it applies on the one hand, it would have to apply on the other. If the pharmaceutical industry is corrupting the medical journals, then because there's a connection, then we'd have to say that that corruption can work the other way if the person who wrote the paper was involved in legal claims against the vaccine makers. You see what I'm saying? I mean, that may be sideways thinking, but it makes sense to me. Does it make sense to you?
No, I'm saying that Dr. Wakefield is a target. He's been whacked by the big pharma mafia. And it's sending out a message to any other scientist or any other person researching that if they're going to put out any kind of research showing how vaccines and autism are connected, they're going to be destroyed. That's the message that I'm getting.
Okay. All right, Nancy, thanks. I appreciate your point of view. Thanks for checking
in.
All right, take care. Marilyn is in Berkeley, California, listening to Green 960. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. Hey, I love your stuff. I love Green 960. It's really good.
Great station.
Yeah, good station. Well, I have a couple of points to make. One, first one is the diseases that people are so scared of, the measles, the mumps, the chicken pox, whooping cough, they can be serious. But the people that they carried away, I mean, this is like 60, 80 years ago, were the incredibly compromised. kids that were slum dwellers, mostly in New York, big cities.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be living in, you know, rat-infested slums. They would have very, very poor nutrition and life filled with stress of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be the first ones to go. I mean, mothers had 10 children sometimes, lost several of them to one of these diseases that would sweep through. So when you have a child who is sleeping well, drinking clean water, eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, having a decent life with an absence of, or a little bit of stress, I guess has to be, but absence of big stress, then you get children whose immune systems are ready, and measles are nothing. I myself didn't inoculate even one of my children. They're all completely hardy adults. Sometimes they're so hardy I'd like to wring their necks. They're strong. They're unbothered by, you know, asthma. None of them wear glasses. And I just stubbornly, I got an idea in my head that it wasn't good to put live viruses into a child's body. To me, that didn't make any sense. So
well,
I looked into it, I discovered that there is a time, for example, when cholera is sweeping through for some reason or another. Again, this is usually in very compromised settings, which we might be having again real soon. Then when it would sweep through, heroic doctors, now this is how this all developed, heroic doctors would try to get in front of this plague coming through and inoculate across, you know, large areas, and it worked. But I think it's overused because children's immune systems are actually tuned up by going through chicken pox. It's usually very mild in a healthy child. So it is a bit of a problem that our whole society looks on these diseases, which can easily be nursed by a mother who's at home. I think that is one crucial thing. The mother that is not at home has to rely on something. But the inoculation, to me, is not a good idea.
Well, let me jump in here because it's my understanding, and I may have this entirely wrong, children are not injected with live viruses. As a matter of fact, I think every single inoculation that Molly has gotten, every single vaccine, hasn't even been a complete dead virus. It's been a bit. It's been a bit of the genetic material.
Yeah, just, you're right. I shouldn't.
Now the H1N1. Well, yes, it's live, quote. Maybe I don't have to put quotes around it, but it's attenuated in that certain aspects of this of its genetic structure have been removed. That's my understanding. And consequently, you know, I don't think I would have live disease put into my child either. But to inject Molly with something that her immune system can later identify, you know, so far, so good. I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. We'll take your phone calls if you want to keep this going. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. All right, we have one more caller on hold on this topic, and then I think we're going to move on. I don't want to cut this short, but this is not exactly what we had planned for this evening. Tobias is in Lincoln, Nebraska, listening on XM. Hi, Tobias.
Hello, Hello, Mike. I'm against, I don't think that vaccines cause autism. I think that the Wakefield study is completely wrong, and parents of children who have autism are using it as sort of a coping mechanism, and they want to find someone to blame for their kid's illness, so they just leap on this Wakefield study and say, hey, it's the vaccine's fault, it's Big Pharma's fault. And I hate Big Pharma, but the FDA does do a pretty good job of making sure that our drugs are safe most of the time when Pfizer or whoever doesn't cover it up. I think it's, especially your first caller, Carolyn, I think that she was just exhibiting that sort of coping mechanism to try and blame someone for her son's condition.
Well, I don't know how to respond to that because Carolyn was certainly
I don't doubt.
Upset.
She's upset, but I'm not saying she's a bad person. It's a completely normal response. People want to find someone to blame, and they just take this bad science, the Wakefield study, and just leap on that. And I just think it's a big public health issue now that kids aren't getting those vaccines because of this misinformation, and that leads to a big public health issue because those diseases are starting to become more prevalent, the measles, the mumps, all those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of my point in pretty intense discussion back and forth between people who draw a connection between autism and vaccines and people who do not. And that is, my feeling is, the further we get away from protecting ourselves, our children, against these diseases, and I see it as protection. Some other people may think that that's ridiculous, that it's not protection at all, but that's precisely how I see it. That's the only reason I get a seasonal flu shot. And it works. I mean, I don't get the flu. There was a period here about a year ago when it seemed like every time I turn around, I was getting one of Molly's little upper bronchial infections. But I haven't had the flu in just about the number of years that I've been getting seasonal flu vaccines and every year. So I'm not ready to write off science, medical science, as being in some kind of pact with Big Pharma to ruin everybody. I'm just not ready to do that.
No.
And I hope I never get to that point. By the same token, I understand, you know, there are products that are rushed to market all the time.
They have to
be recalled. I think about some of these, I think they were arthritis medicines that were causing people to have heart attacks. And die. I mean, that's craziness. That's absolute craziness. But those are not vaccines. Those were not medicines designed to cure something. They were to ameliorate a situation. And that's where I think Big Pharma, so-called, is really guilty as hell for everything it's been charged with. But where it concerns the vaccine process, it's my understanding also that there is so little profit in producing vaccines that nobody wants to do it. So to say that somebody is making these big fortunes on vaccines, to me is, I don't know. I'm not aware of that, if that's the case. So
yeah,
anyway.
Hey.
All right, Tobias, I'm going to move on. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, I appreciate you checking in. All right, we have one more. All right. Last call, Tina from Moscow, Idaho. Listen, I'm serious. Hey, Tina.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I've been sitting here in and out because I'm working right now. I work for people with special needs, and I've been sitting listening to this discussion about autism, and I work with people with autism, and I know several mothers and fathers of people that have autism.
Right.
And there is a correlation between the shots and getting autism. It might not be the whole thing, but take, for instance, my friend. She has two autistic children.
Mm-hmm.
She took her first child in for a round of 5 shots in a row. And she questioned her doctor, and her doctor made her feel like she was a bad parent for questioning him. And she allowed him to give her child 5 shots in a row. And now her child is very severely autistic, when before the shots, her child was completely normal. And it's just infuriating working with these people and knowing parents and families that are affected by this. It's infuriating for us to listen to people question it and blindly follow whatever their doctors told them to do.
Well, I don't, just as a matter of you know, maintaining one's own sovereignty, I don't think following anything a doctor says or anything anybody says, it makes a whole lot of sense. But when you cite that as an example, Tina, I can cite as an example my own kid, who's had a whole series of vaccinations. God, I've lost count, and never.
No, I know, I understand that. But
so,
also,
but my
like
point.
Everything people.
But
are
wait. Let me finish the thought.
My tolerances and don't have tolerances for certain substances.
Okay, I understand.
Everybody's different.
I understand what you're saying there, Tina. But if the variable is the person getting the shot. That's kind of my point. If the variable is the individual body chemistry of the adult or the child, the individual genetic makeup, the individual allergic makeup, if that's the variable, the person, and not what's being injected, then that kind of takes the vaccination off the hook. I get your point, Tina. Thank you. I get your point about people who are dealing with autistic children. I have I know two families that have autism with children, and I don't know them well enough to be friends. I mean, we're not friends. I just know these people. I know who they are. And I don't know what their point of view would be, but I also know 20 families with children about Molly's age that do not have autism. And all of the children, I don't know how it is in other states, but here in Georgia, you can't go to school unless you produce. Your child can't go to school unless you produce a vaccination record. Now, a lot of people take offense at that. I happen not to. Again, if the variable is the person and not the vaccine, then it's just kind of backwards, isn't it? And again, I understand in a sense. I can never fully understand, but I understand in a sense the anguish that parents who are dealing with autistic children go through on a 24/7, 365 basis. I understand. I to a degree. Not really. You know what I'm saying? That's like someone saying, well, gee, I'm sorry your father died. I'd feel for you. No, you don't. No, you don't. That's my grief. Same thing with saying, well, I understand. I don't know. We don't understand unless you're there. You don't understand it. I certainly don't. So my bottom line on this, and until it changes. And these aren't weasel words. It's just the way I look at these kinds of situations. I trust science. I trust medical science. I realize it's an imperfect, it's more of an art than a science. So much of it. I trust people who are working in the field, in this particular field, medical researchers. I have a lot of suspicions about any massive corporation, including big pharmaceutical companies, but not necessarily where it concerns vaccines.
so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Last night we were talking about depleted uranium. Mike writes in, while listening to last night's podcast about depleted uranium, I wanted to throw in my 2 cents worth. Uranium, even depleted, is constantly degrading into lead. The transitory elements between uranium and lead can and do emit different types of radiation. Even though a chunk of uranium may emit alpha particles, which can be stopped with paper, the other transition elements radiate alpha, beta, and even gamma. So you see, not only is depleted uranium poisonous, but a tiny portion of the DU has already transitioned into crap that is quite toxic and can have worse effects. Google uranium decay to really see all the fun facts. So it isn't just the uranium, Mike. It's the radium and the thorium and the, well, you get the picture. Speaking of pictures, somewhere on the web is an X-ray of a lung with a small amount of an alpha emitter embedded in it. The picture looks like a dandelion, but all the little hairs are really trails of burned tissue as these alpha particles pop off the source and give their host lung cancer. We are doomed as a nation, Mike. I hate these vermin. Mike in Oregon City. Well, thanks for the nuclear decay lesson. I appreciate that. I don't know that stuff. I really don't. That's why I like this audience. Right? The big story today was the hearings. Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, coming out in favor of ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And allowing people who are openly gay to serve in the military. Max Fisher, blogging at theatlantic.com. Writes, military officers don't tend to be outspokenly opinionated. Military culture, after all, rewards officers for executing orders. It does necessarily encourage, say, taking a public stand on a controversial social issue. It does not necessarily encourage. Admiral Mike Mullen, as chairman of the Joint Chiefs, is an unusual position. As the highest-ranking officer in the military, he sets policy. But Mullen's testimony today before the Senate Armed Service Committee when he called for repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell was striking for its clearly personal, even heartfelt tone. This is what he said. Here's a quote. Quote, Mr. Chairman, speaking for myself and myself only, it is my personal belief that allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly would be the right thing to do. No matter how I look at the issue, I cannot escape being troubled by the fact that we have in place a policy which forces young men and women to lie about who they are in order to defend their fellow citizens. For me, personally, it comes down to integrity, theirs as individuals and ours as an institution. I do also believe that the great young men and women of our military can and would accommodate such a change. I never underestimate their ability to adapt. Max Fisher goes on to say Mullen's testimony is drawing a lot of praise from liberals, thrilled to see him take charge. Conservative opponents of his position have been unable to bring themselves to criticize Mullen's position as they are less willing to question his judgment. Outside of his leadership within the military, this may be Mullen's greatest political contribution to repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Andy in Seattle writes, Mike, once again, we're getting ready to have all sorts of hearings on Don't Ask, Don't Tell over the next few months. And with this televised extravaganza, we no doubt will hear how allowing gays and lesbians into the military openly will destroy morale, ruin our already broken military, and the list will go on and on and on. The one side item that won't be talked about, though, is a bigger issue in the military. We ask our men and women to, in uniform, to win the hearts and minds of those Iraqis and Afghans who are different from themselves. We're asking them to be empathetic and, frankly, be the professional soldiers they're supposed to be. If we accept that as a true statement, at least in theory, then don't we have a bigger problem in our military other than don't ask, don't tell? How can we ask our military personnel to win those hearts and minds of our enemy if they have issues with their own fellow Americans who are gay or lesbian? Seriously, isn't this the most un-PC question that we honestly should be asking? Yeah, sure. And our military affairs correspondent watched the hearings today and kind of wrote along. She writes, I watched the Don't Ask, Don't Tell hearings today. Secretary of Defense Gates and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs Mike Mullen testified to the Senate Armed Services Committee on the issue. I wrote this from notes I took while watching the hearings. And I'm going to share those with you as soon as we come back from this break from Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Anyway, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, watched the hearings today, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and wrote this. She writes, I'm watching the Senate Armed Services hearings on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. John McCain is defending Don't Ask, Don't Tell, of course. He asks, what has changed since 1993 when DADT was implemented? As far as he's concerned, nothing has changed. He certainly hasn't. McCain is such a bitter and miserable old man. I'm half expecting him to tell the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to get off my lawn. Speaking of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mike Mullen says he has served in the military with homosexuals since 1968 and hasn't had a problem. Jeff Sessions, Republican, Alabama, accuses Mike Admiral Mullen of exhibiting, quote, undue command influence, end quote, because the admiral supports the commander-in-chief's policy of overturning DADT. Mullen doesn't raise his voice, but I think he's genuinely insulted by Sessions' comments. I'll bet Sessions never said anything like that to Peter Pace, the previous chairman of the Joint Chiefs, or David Petraeus. It was weird to see these Republicans talking down to the top military officer and civilian from the Pentagon. Senator Roland Burris, Democrat from Illinois, pointed out that people didn't want to racially integrate the military back in the day and that those opponents used a lot of the same excuses for not changing the military that we are hearing today. As you know, many of our allies allow gays to serve openly in their militaries. Many of those allies have served with American military personnel in Iraq and Afghanistan. Senators Susan Collins, Republican, Jack Reed, Democrat, West Point graduate, Army vet, and Armed Services Committee Chairman Carl Levin separately asked the two witnesses if we have had any problems with other militaries who serve with us in our two wars who have allowed gays to serve openly in their militaries. Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs said no. Even Lieberman supports overturning Don't Ask, Don't Tell, although I doubt he'll push it. Apparently he didn't support DADT when it was implemented in 1993. After the hearing adjourns, committee chairman Carl Levin informally spoke to members of the press who asked him questions. You could hear some of the questions and answers. Remember Lieutenant Dan Choi, who came out on the Rachel Maddow show? He's an Iraq War veteran and West Point graduate who is fluent in Arabic. He personally spoke to committee chairman Sander Levin. Or Carl Levin. Off camera, he introduced himself to Levin and then pleaded, sir, I just want to serve. Sharon. Yeah, I didn't see it today, although I heard some of the reports on CNN listening on Sirius out and about today in the car. The estimates are there are as many as 60 to 80,000 gay men, lesbian women already serving in the military. And again, it's such a stupid issue. I mean, the only arguments I've heard is that it would reduce unit cohesion or unit morale. And my question has always been, how? What the hell are you talking about? How does it lessen unit cohesion? And as far as morale is concerned, what the hell are they talking about? Most of the people, and I'll say this just right out, most of the people who oppose openly gay people serving the military are homophobic. They get concerned about their own feelings of physical attraction towards members of the same sex, feelings that every human being has. We are conditioned, heterosexuals are conditioned to suppress that. Because people who are not homosexual are predominantly heterosexual. As far as I'm concerned, it's on a continuum with way over here being exclusively homosexual, way over here being exclusively heterosexual. And my belief, after observing and in certain instances participating across that part, that continuum over the course of my life, is that people can land on it anytime, any place. I realize there are people who are exclusively gay, exclusively straight. Okay. But to get all bizarre about it is just so damn ridiculous. I don't understand. I can understand Jeff Sessions being afraid of it. You know, Jeff Sessions, who talks like he's got a mouthful of, what did I say, a mouthful of chitlins, something. Jeff Sessions can't talk right. He's been in Alabama too damn long. But and McCain, what's up with McCain? I mean, I wish McCain would just, I don't know, go open a filling station someplace. I don't know, open up a Dipper Dan franchise. Just get the hell out of the Senate. You just irritate me. Just your mere presence irritates me. God, I don't like that guy. But mostly it is Southern white men who express this. I'm talking about the congressional hearings. Black folks are anti-gay too. I mean, everybody's anti-gay, right? White people don't have an exclusive franchise on that one. But and I don't mean everybody's anti-gay. You know what I'm saying? It crosses gender and religion and yada 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 yada, race. I've never been able to understand the opposition to homosexual rights, human rights, coming from black people, though. I mean, I can understand from white people. White people, you know, who do we have left to pound into the ground with our bigotry and prejudice, right? Who do we have left? Jesus. You know, I mean, Beyonce walks off with six Grammys last night, right? And the white girl got three. I mean, So what's left, right? Well, let's get to queers. But to see these old white men still talking this trashy talk about folks who happen to be gay, and I don't know, I want to grab them by their lapels. I want to grab old Jeff by his lapels and say, look. What are you afraid of, man? It's like the abortion issue. If you don't believe in abortion, then don't get one. You know, if you don't believe gay folk are equal to you, then don't hang out with them. Don't, you know, I can't even put together sentences about this. It is just ludicrous. The whole damn thing is just ludicrous. My favorite phrases from scared heterosexuals is like the gay agenda. The gay agenda. That one always just, I mean, it ripples up my spine like a crabs or lobsters, you know. It's just the gay agenda. You dumbasses. Oops. What is a gay agenda? What does that mean? To come into your neighborhood and make all the houses look livable and nice? Gay agenda. Oh, that's right. To capture our children and turn them all into queers. That's right. I forgot.
I was just going to say to make sure that everything is color coordinated and nothing clashes.
Yeah, that's the gay agenda. Jesus. The stuff that right-wingers come up with to destroy this country, just on and on, and all this talk now about, come the elections this November, everything is going to go conservative again. Oh, because it's always been so healthy and good and advances the country. And yeah, the election of the brown guy in Massachusetts, that's his name, not his caller. The election of the brown guy in Massachusetts, there you go. And Sarah Palin, and oh, everything's going to be conservative and wonderful again, like it was during 8 years of Bush. Then the queers will sit down and shut up. Right? It's astonishing. It's still an issue. Now, what happens when you owe somebody trillions, like we owe China? At what point does China, you know, take a look around and say, those people owe us a lot of money? China is warning Barack Obama that if Obama meets with the Dalai Lama, it will, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, undermine U.S.-China relations and even hurt America's prospects for economic recovery. You get that? Hurt America's prospects for economic recovery. Zhu Weigun, executive deputy head of the Communist Party's United Front Work Department, said today that such a meeting would seriously undermine the political foundations of Chinese-U.S. relations. He said that by inviting the Dalai Lama to the White House, the U.S. would, quote, harm others but bring no profit to itself. And then he added this little thread about American prospects for economic recovery. He said, how would such a meeting help the United States surmount the current economic crisis? there was a news conference today, I guess. The Chinese held a news conference. The Communist Party official Zhu Weigun didn't elaborate on how China would retaliate if Obama does meet the Dalai Lama, but he said, quote, we will take corresponding measures to make the relevant countries realize their mistakes, end quote. Well, I'll be damned. Regarding China warning Barack Obama that a meeting with the Dalai Lama will undermine U.S.-China relations and even hurt America's prospects for economic recovery. Whew, that's pretty heavy, man. There's a little bit more to it than that. Last week, I think it was last week, the United States said, well, the United States didn't say anything because it's just a construct on paper somewhere. A spokesperson for the government of the United States said that the United States will go ahead with a deal it made to sell $6.5 billion worth of weapons to Taiwan. Now, regardless of your feelings about China and Taiwan, as it's now called, I remember when it was called Formosa. At least it was called that in my third grade geography book. But regardless of your thoughts about China's relationship to Taiwan and vice versa, there is only one reason to sell $6.5 billion worth of weaponry to the government of Taiwan. And that is for a means of a provocation to the Chinese mainland, because let's be real, if China decided to open its mouth and bite Taiwan, it would disappear in one gulp. But the military-industrial establishment in this country sees, you know, this ongoing, this 60-year-long conflict between what, when I was a kid, we used to laughingly call the nationalist Chinese as opposed to the communist Chinese. Are you old enough to remember that? Remember the nationalist Chinese and the communist Chinese, right? Huh? It seems like a million years ago. The nationalist Chinese, we are still arming, and which is pretty insane when you get right down to it, don't you think? But it's a great outlet for the military-industrial complex in this country. It gives them one more avenue where they can sell their death weapons.
Formosa?
You're too young.
Is that something you make countertops out of, or is that some kind of flour?
No, that's Formica.
How old are you?
I'll never tell you. And if I see you looking at my driver's license again to find out.
I'd love to see a map from back then.
It looks the same, Kathy.
Was it just on papyrus?
It's just a different name for that island. I bet you've never heard of Matsu and Kimoi either, have you?
Bless you.
It's hard being married to someone who comes from an entirely different generation.
We have letters for our generation.
It's just unbelievable sometimes. Anyway, in response to our selling $6.5 billion of weaponry to Taiwan, China has suspended military relations and threatened sanctions against U.S. companies involved in the sale. A move that the a spokesman for Barack Obama called unwarranted. Oh, really? It's unwarranted? Now, Carrie Brown, who's a China expert at Chatham House, which is a think tank in London, it's easy for him to say because he's in London. He says, quote, if China wants to pick a fight with the U.S. on this, it needs to think of the $260 billion of goods it ships to America each year and the security of the $800 billion of treasury bonds it has. Well, Mr. Brown, I think it's more than $800 billion. Brown says, despite all this bluff, it's not going to happen. A trade war would be mutually assured destruction. He goes on to say, maybe China needs to think about why it is having rows with everyone about everything at the moment. Climate change, executions, treatment of dissidents, trade, the Chinese yuan, Taiwan, the Dalai Lama. Brown said, quote, China can't be right all the time, and is putting itself in a highly unproductive corner, end quote. Yeah, everybody's got to get along, see, in order for globalism to succeed. Now, there will always be winners and losers. A big winner in the trade area is China. Plus, they have at any time, they can activate, what, a 5 million member standing army? They have that now, I think, don't they? 5 million member standing army. They can probably throw another 25 or 30 million soldiers on any battlefield with 30 days' notice. The United States, on the other hand, we don't have the economic power. This is not the American century, the 21st century. It is not, and it will not be. And that's something that Americans better get used to. The rest of the world is adjusting. This is the Chinese century. The Asian century might be a better description, but it would be dominated by the Chinese. And in that regard, since it is the Chinese century, why in the world would the government of the United States be provoking the dragon by selling $6.5 billion worth of weapons to Taiwan that, A, will never be used? What, Taiwan's going to invade China? And if China were to decide to take a bite out of Taiwan, what, $6.5 billion, $60 billion worth of weapons would be nothing. It's a game. Don't you get sick of it sometimes? I sure do. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Mulroy.